While the attorneys are getting settled, I will call the second case. Case number A24-1559. Please correct me if I pronounce the name wrong. Chengtua versus Bedote Learning Center. Good morning, counsel. It's my understanding that we received correspondence from the Learning Center that they are not going to be appearing today, and you'll be presenting for the full 15 minutes?
That's correct.
Okay, excellent. With that, I assume both of you know you'll have your full 15 minutes, and appellant, you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal. The podium is adjustable, so please feel free to take time to adjust the podium to your comfort level before you begin. And then we're only creating an audio record of today's case, so if you could please identify yourselves and your client before you begin, we would appreciate it. And that audio record will be available within 24 hours. With that, counsel for appellant, you may begin when you are ready.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Russell Squire. I'm an attorney at Southern Minnesota Regional Legal Services, and I represent the relator in this matter, Mr. Vongi Chengtua. Now, can you be denied unemployment benefits when you did not engage in the conduct for which you were terminated? Our position is that you cannot. This started last year. Mr. Chengtua was a math teacher for middle school students at Bedote Charter School. In February of last year, a student made very serious allegations against him, which led to his immediate suspension and eventual termination. When Mr. Chengtua wrote to his employer to ask why was he fired, his employer wrote back and gave him two answers. He was fired because he had viewed pornography at work and because he tried to cover up that fact. Mr. Chengtua then applied for unemployment benefits. The department sent Bedote a questionnaire. Again, that questionnaire asked, why was Mr. Chengtua terminated? They provided, again, the exact same answer. He was terminated for viewing pornography at work and trying to cover it up. Mr. Chengtua went to a hearing, and at that hearing, he established that neither of those things were true. He did not view pornography at work. He did not try to cover it up. And yet, Mr. Chengtua was still denied unemployment benefits. And that's...
So let me just kind of jump into where I'm struggling with this case, and maybe you can help clarify. So let's say that we disagree with you as to whether or not there were other grounds for termination. So I get the point about the letter that really the only reason they fired him was because of the pornography allegations. Just for argument's sake, let's say that there were other reasons, that in fact the letter kind of, incorporated some other misconduct, and that beforehand had been communicated that there had been those four violations, the pornography was one of them. I can understand the point that it seems like this was maybe the last straw, or this was like, okay, this was the reason that they ultimately pulled the trigger when they did. Where in the statute or what case law can you point us to that kind of because of language is almost like a but for, if he hadn't done that, they wouldn't have fired him then.
Yeah.
But that seems to me a different question from saying it wasn't because of this and a lot of other reasons. So where do you get that, like, it?
Yeah, so I agree. I think those are two separate independent reasons why we can win. First, that it's the sole reason for termination. Second, that there were other reasons. But there's the sort of but-for cause, that the trigger incident did not happen. And I don't think there's a good case to cite, because I think that's, frankly, an incredibly unusual occurrence, that we have this instance where there's this written up report. We know that they've decided not to terminate him for this other conduct. A new incident happens, they terminate him, and then we find out that this inciting incident wasn't.
Why do we know that they decide because of the conditions or because of the
Because of the conditions and
the improvement plan?
And Mr. Peterson Briggs testified that they weren't going to terminate him based on that written report.
I thought Ms. Peterson Briggs testified that the board ultimately terminated him for multiple reasons, including the
So what her testimony was, that When she prepared the report that went to the board, she included everything in there. So she assumes that the board considered everything when terminating Mr. Chongtua. She doesn't have any direct knowledge or any knowledge at all of why the board actually made that decision. Her testimony is simply her inference on what the board, she thinks the board did based on what information she presented to them.
I guess that doesn't really answer my question. I mean, said Ms. Peterson-Briggs said that he was terminated because of the pornography. And my question was, doesn't she say on the record that he was terminated for multiple things?
That's her position. I was just saying that, before that, when asked about the written report, she agreed that she was not going to terminate based on that written report before the pornography allegation. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Sorry. Okay.
But that he received the written report after the pornography allegations.
Correct.
Correct.
But it was prepared before the pornography allegations. Actually, the testimony was it was prepared that morning, and then that afternoon they got word of these allegations and then immediately suspended him. So then he was presented the written report during the suspension.
But why then? So this goes back to my question is, why isn't it still because, like, that he was still terminated because of those other things as well? So I hear your point that, you know, that it's kind of unusual, but I still don't think that answers the question as to why we don't read because of is looking at all of the reasons and why, you know, and maybe the statute was intended to not allow for unemployment benefits when, you know, you were terminated because of misconduct, even if it wasn't the triggering event, but that there were other things in the, you know, that ultimately kind of gave rise to it. So,
We read that along with, like, the Shuneman case, where we look at, you know, we really are focused on just purely the reason for termination. You know, prior misconduct doesn't matter when you're looking at whether somebody's eligible for unemployment benefits unless it's the reason for termination. And here we've got, you know, because of, I think, strongly implies that the triggering event, that why he was terminated, and here I think the record is quite clear that the triggering event here, he would not have been terminated had these false allegations never been made. Because of that, and
we're not terminated at that moment.
In that moment, sure. If he you know, hypothetically, he was, you know, the school agreed, you know, we don't buy these allegations. He goes along. Maybe he succeeds in, you know, those corrective actions, and he's not terminated. Maybe he fails, and then he is terminated. If he failed those corrective actions, that would, you know, potentially be, you know, misconduct based on those previous actions. But since he never got the chance to do that, they prepared this report, and he was terminated for these other reasons. I don't think it's supported by, you know, substantial evidence, or it's legally correct to say that he was terminated based on the because.
Well, this was one of my questions for you, which is, it seems to me, I just want to clarify that you're raising a substantial evidence question, not a legal interpretation question.
I think it's both. I'm raising both.
Well, I'm asking what you raised in your brief.
So the brief is mostly, we're talking about substantial evidence.
Okay. Because I guess I didn't interpret your brief as making an argument about the interpretation of the word because of. I understood your brief to be arguing there is a lack of substantial evidence in the record that he was terminated because of mm-hmm. these other things.
Yeah.
And so my question for you is, at the end of the day, why isn't this just a credibility determination of the ULJ with regard to whether to believe Ms. Peterson-Briggs about the reasons for termination? And at that point, like, why, if we assume that the ULJ thought that her testimony was credible, why isn't that substantial evidence that there were other reasons for this termination?
I don't think Ms. Peterson-Briggs' credibility comes into it because, you know, she credibly testified what she thinks might have happened. That's not evidence. It doesn't matter how credible a witness is if what they're testifying to isn't substantial. You know, we're looking at the substantial evidence test here, and it has to be weighed against the evidence in the record that this was the only reason for termination. So I don't think there's any issue with credibility. I don't think we need to say that Ms. Peterson-Briggs wasn't a credible witness. I think even if she can 100% believe that, you know, I presented this evidence, so that's what they must have done. But that's still a logical leap, an assumption.
But there's more in the record than just her testimony. I mean, there's the official termination letter. There was the reasons for termination that was given earlier, which, you know, at least the ALJ had made a determination that looking at that together fairly incorporated the prior allegation or misconduct citations or warnings.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is a huge leap the judge made that I just don't think is supported by the record. You know, it's tying, you know, it doesn't say anywhere on the face of that letter, and she's just basically ignoring, you know, that letter was clear. There's two bullet points. Boom, boom. Here's why we terminated him, and then just some catch-all language. And then going through later, the judge was like, well, maybe they were talking about this.
So here's where I'm struggling. I mean, and you can correct me if I'm wrong. My understanding is that your arguments about Section 181.933, I believe those come from the whistleblower statute, right? Mm-hmm. And that, you know, the purpose of those notices is so that if you want to bring some kind of whistleblower action, the employer needs to give you their truthful reasons, and that then in the context of a whistleblower action, the employer is kind of stuck with those as the reason for termination when you're doing the burden shifting and all of those kind of things. What case law do we have about that section's applicability to unemployment or how the ULJ, like, it just seems to me that you're saying because this statute in the context of the whistleblower statute requires these to be truthful reasons, therefore, a ULJ in a completely different proceeding needs to take these as the only reasons. And it just feels like there's sort of a logical jump there. And if you could, you know, help me understand, you know, why we should import that into this area of law, that would be helpful.
Sure. I mean, I understand that it's in the whistleblower statute, you know, in that chapter. But how I read that is it's creating a general right for employees to understand the reason for termination. So this applies in employment discrimination claims, Minnesota Human Rights Act claims, don't arise under the Whistleblower Act. But requesting a true reason for termination is going to be really important for proving any of those cases, because that's another instance where the employer's shifting reasons are evidence of, you know, sort of malicious intent, or that the employer might have committed discrimination. So I look at this as a general, you know, employee right that, you know, goes beyond the Whistleblower Act. That this is a statute that's been cited only a couple times. You know, it's presumably.
Has it ever been cited outside the whistleblower context?
I don't think so.
Okay. I wasn't able to find one.
I wasn't able to find one. I mean, I think we cited both the cases on this.
Yeah.
But it is certainly, you know, I think it can certainly be used more broadly than that. There's nothing within the text of the statute itself that ties it to the whistleblower statute. And understanding your reasons for termination from your employer can be useful in a wide variety of contexts.
It does seem like quite a different context between allegations that you were retaliated against for something at work, and so there is some malicious conduct, versus this in the context of unemployment law, it's less about the employer's pretextual or other reasons for terminating, and more about kind of the reason for I guess I'm struggling to see why. Like, maybe it does make more sense in the whistleblower context to have a kind of brighter line rule that you're looking only at this letter, because then you're going to hold the employer to a different standard on their burden.
Well, I mean, I would disagree that it makes more sense there, because understanding the reason for termination is the only thing in unemployment cases. You know, the reason for termination and whether it was misconduct or not, when we're looking at a discharge case, that's the whole argument. You know, it's specifically there, you know, to limit the record, to limit what the employer is able to bring in about, you know, the course of conduct, you know, so the employer can't, you know, lay off individuals who, you know, maybe committed misconduct. And it gives, you know, the employers the right to you know, like they might have done with Mr. Changtua, say, hey, this is, you know, this is misconduct, but, you know, this, maybe we could terminate you for misconduct here, but, you know, instead we're going to put you on a warning and keep you working without letting them.
What's funny about that here is, like, holding that, you know, they had all these other reasons that had they known that the pornography allegation might have not panned out or been wrong, it doesn't, that's not a result of their, you know, somehow not giving the true reasons, but it was kind of like the one big one that was like, okay, final. So, yeah. And then now it's just odd that now that that's turned out to have been false or shown to be not have been true, that, but not necessarily because of the conduct of the employer that we then penalize the employer for how they wrote the letter.
Well, so, I mean, so this is the unemployment context. We're not penalizing the employer for anything. This isn't a wrongful termination
hearing. Well, they're having a consequence of it because in the end then they would, their taxes will go. I mean, the way that they have to pay the system.
I mean, they're, sure, a very minor tax consequence. But you can terminate employees for good business reasons. You can have it be the correct decision to terminate somebody and it not be misconduct. You know, the unemployment statute is written to try to, you know, limit the number of cases that are misconduct. So just because the employer was right to fire somebody doesn't mean that it was misconduct and that the person should be denied unemployment benefits.
Well, this was an at-will employee that could have been fired at any point anyway, right?
That's correct.
Thank you, counsel. You will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Counsel for respondent. I was going to say, please feel free to adjust the podium.
May it please the court, counsel. I am Melanie Markham, and I am representing the Department of Employment and Economic Development today. This is a case where the reason for discharge was disputed, and as is required, the unemployment law judge considered evidence on the competing reasons for discharge. She weighed the evidence, she determined the credibility of the witnesses, and made a decision on what the reason for the discharge was. And the reason for discharge is a question of fact for the unemployment law judge to decide, and it should be given deference. So in this case, Bidote Learning Center asserted that Mr. Changtua was discharged for multiple reasons. Mr. Changtua claims that he was discharged for the singular reason of suspected viewing of pornography in the classroom. The unemployment law judge's determination that he was discharged for multiple reasons is supported by substantial evidence in the record.
Could you lay out precisely what evidence you think proves, what is the substantial evidence in the record on that element? Because, right, I do think that appellant has a point with regard to the equivocation of Ms. Peterson-Briggs regarding, like, I'm not the board, I'm not eight people, I don't know what was in all of their minds when they were making this decision. So it would be helpful to me if you could just lay out, like, what are the precise pieces of evidence that you think supported the finding?
Sure. I believe that the first piece is Ms. Peterson-Briggs' testimony. She was the person that received all the complaints. She was the person that investigated the complaints, including interviewing students, speaking with staff members, and speaking with parents. And she's the person that communicated with Mr. Changtua about Bidote Learning Center's expectations, especially on the issue of the disciplinary reports. And she testified that she presented all this evidence to the executive committee. She didn't just present the report of viewing pornography. She presented it all to the executive committee, who made a recommendation to discharge Mr. Changtua, and the board of directors then did vote to discharge him. Secondly, I think that there's a lot of documentary evidence that supports the decision. First, we have the employer's investigatory notes. That document was shared with Mr. Changtua and discussed with him. He was given an opportunity to respond to all of the incidents. It gave the dates of the incidents, a description of them. And he was also sent it electronically afterwards. So he had, as counsel said, if it was a general right to know the reasons for your discharge, he did receive a lot of that information.
So can you help me kind of understand, in this world that we're in where there are multiple, I'm going to throw my same kind of hypothetical, in the world where we agree that there were multiple reasons for discharge that were explained or that contributed to this decision. But one of those is now not misconduct. So what evidence in the record is there that they terminated him because of the other misconduct and not the pornography charge? Because it seems to me like they weren't terminating him based on the other misconduct until this happened, and then they terminated him and named all these reasons. So how do I grapple with that? What's evidence about that misconduct?
I think one thing to look at here is the timeline of events. Bidote Learning Center received a complaint on the day of suspension that Mr. Chung Toa had yelled at a student and made them cry. There was complaints 2 days before that. He called a student a disgrace to the family.
Can you just refresh my recollection? That other complaint on the same day, was that part of Ms. Peterson Briggs' report that she was preparing that day?
It was.
Okay.
It was included in there.
Okay.
I mean, that's just for the record, Exhibit 12 at page 53.
Yeah. Sorry, I interrupted you. I just wanted to.
And also the termination letter, the original termination letter that was sent to Mr. Chung Toa, said that the reasons for discharge was that he, for violations of legitimate employment expectations regarding the failure to comply with the code of ethics for teachers, and the two portions of the code of ethics that were cited to state, a teacher shall take reasonable disciplinary action in exercising the authority to provide an atmosphere conducive to learning. And the other provision was a teacher shall not knowingly make false or malicious statements about students or colleagues. So I think that taking all of this together at the time of discharge, he had this meeting where they discussed all of the complaints and incidents that were ongoing up until that day of suspension. In the termination letter, it talks about multiple violations, talks about not taking disciplinary action in your classroom.
Are there provisions of the handbook that could have been cited for the pornography incident? Or is that I guess what I'm trying to get at is, like, to the extent we're citing the handbook, was there, you know, an opportunity that they could have cited to the pornography incident, or is that kind of outside the scope of the handbook?
My understanding is that there are provisions in the handbook regarding use of the electronics and proper use of that. The letter did cite the code of ethics for teachers, but they could have cited to the handbook regarding use of electronics.
Oh, that's right. Does the code of ethics have things around computer usage and proper computer usage? If you don't know, that's fine.
I'm not for certain. And also, finally, just the truthful reason for termination letter. In there, the school did use expansive language. It wasn't limiting. It was also sent at the same time as his whole personnel record, so he had all of the information.
But you have to understand, I mean, this is the thing that troubles me about this case, I'll be honest, is it just doesn't seem like it would have been that hard to include all of the incidents in this letter if those were the truthful reasons for termination. And so, you know, while I think on appellant side, I sort of struggle with, like, what's the application of this statute in the context of unemployment, I think on the flip side, you get a request under the Whistleblower Act that says give us all of the truthful reasons why you're terminating, and then you only cite to the pornography incidents. That's somewhat troubling to me when it would be a minor amount of work to say the pornography incidents plus see this attached report for all of the other reasons, right? I mean, it just, there is some tension in the record about the truthful reason why this person was terminated and whether those other incidents really were the reason.
Yes, I understand that. And I think that the unemployment law judge did a good job of questioning Ms. Peterson-Briggs about why that wasn't included, both in the termination letter. And Ms. Peterson-Briggs testified that she believed that it was included because it does include any violations of performance of the job duties. Whether it would have just required a minimal amount of effort, I don't think negates the consideration of all the other evidence that was presented. I believe that all of this, the testimony and all of the documents, the unemployment law judge considered all of that evidence and determined that there were multiple reasons for the discharge in this case. Employers are allowed to do that. There's often multiple reasons for discharge. The fact that they were going to issue some type of discipline for some of the conduct doesn't mean that they could have changed their mind or that that can't be the basis for the discharge. All of it can be contributions to the reasons for the discharge.
Why the relator cites to the Lumpkin case as, you know, sort of this, for this idea that you should only look at the things in the termination notice for the basis for employment. Why shouldn't we follow relator's proposed interpretation of Lumpkin?
I believe that in the unemployment context that all of the record can be considered, such as in the Schuneman case where they directed the unemployment law judge to consider all of the reasons for discharge, to weigh the evidence, determine the credibility, and make a finding regarding what the reason for the discharge was. This isn't a case where there was some, you know, distinct event of misconduct that occurred 1 year prior that wasn't connected. This was a timeline of ongoing events, discipline leading up to the date of suspension. I'd just like to point out, with the time left here, that Mr. Changtoa has not disputed the unemployment law judge's findings that he failed to complete the disciplinary reports, used rude and abusive language with students, and failed to manage his classroom. He also has not challenged the determination that such conduct constitutes employment misconduct under the unemployment statute. Therefore, if the question of fact regarding the reasons for discharge is affirmed, his conduct is employment misconduct. There's no more questions for me. I'll cede the rest of my time, and I'll just close with reminding that the unemployment law judge in this case weighed the evidence regarding the reasons for discharge. The reasons for discharge is a question of fact for the unemployment law judge to decide. There is substantial evidence in the record to support the decision of the unemployment law judge, and deed respectfully ask that you affirm the unemployment law judge's decision.
Any questions? Seeing none, thank you, counsel. Counsel for relator, you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you. I'll just start off briefly touching on this termination letter. It wasn't submitted into the record. The ULJ didn't cite it at all in her decision. It doesn't actually say anything factual, so I just don't think it has much relevance to the sufficiency of the evidence here and this decision. And I want to go back a little bit, too, to talk a little bit more about the written evidence here. I don't want us to get too hung up on the whistleblower statute and how that applies. I do think it strengthens, you know, how we should read the letter. But even if we say it doesn't matter, we still have two written records of what the employer thinks the reason for termination is, written after the termination. Remember, Ms. Peterson-Briggs, you know, knowledge is all prior to the decision to terminate. Her role was all before, given the executive committee what information she had. She doesn't know what the executive committee did with it, doesn't know what the board did with it. And then after, so it's a black box. And then after that, we get two written answers, and they're both very clear. And frankly, Of course they're clear. Those allegations are obviously independently sufficient reasons to terminate somebody, especially a teacher. It makes perfect sense that they wouldn't worry about any of this other stuff if there's such a serious allegation that they believe was true. So I don't think there's any reason to be surprised or assume that, you know, why wasn't this in here? Because they didn't consider it. It would have been so easy. They had a written report. They could have just put the headings in there.
But why under the Deli case, where the other information was attached, why under Deli isn't the ULJ's sort of lumping everything together? Why isn't that the correct way that the ULJ should have looked at the letter in connection with all of the other information received?
Well, so I don't think the other information was, like, attached in the same way it was in the Deli case. It's like there wasn't, you know, they sent him his whole personnel file, I believe because he requested it. They're required to. That's not unusual. I'm sure there's plenty of things in the personnel file that are not related to the termination. So I don't think sending the personnel file and saying, like, well, hey, everything in there, that's why you were terminated.
Disagree that the, like, report with all of the other incidents, that was in his...
It was presented to him, yeah. No, I don't dispute
that.
Well,
or that would have been in his employment file that was submitted to him.
No, okay. I don't dispute that, okay. No. I just think that doesn't mean that it becomes this reason because, well, there was other discipline in your employment file. We didn't mention it when we asked you why you were terminated, but, you know, here it is.
Well, but why don't we read the letter, looking at the... There's that clause in the letter that says including but not limited to or something, right?
Yeah.
So, and I take the point that I think you made in your brief that if you just read any letter with including but not limited to, it could be expansive and cover any other reason. But here, why didn't that language give the ULJ some, certainly it's like some kind of discretion to look into the record and see what could the other things have been and to then kind of read it into that and as a way to get into the record.
Sure. So I think a couple problems here are, again, we don't have any other post-decision evidence that refers back. Ms. Pearson Briggs' evidence is looking forward. And read it too in context with, you know, the first answer they gave when unemployment sent out the questionnaire. Why did you terminate them? Because he viewed pornography in the classroom and because we because he attempted to cover it up. Those were the only reasons listed there. So it's sort of this evolving story that much later on they come back and say, well, actually it was everything. And, you know, if you squint and you read this, you know, introductory phrase to the letter that, you know, sure, we could have included anything in there. But I think that's giving it way too much weight, especially when this is information that, had it been considered, very easy to come in. It's not like there's this really diffuse, you know, group of misconduct that they're alleging that would be difficult to put in. They had a report, you know, prepared with headers. If they'd relied on that in terminating him, they could have just put that in the termination letter, and we wouldn't be here.
I see no other questions.
Well, I have 10 seconds left, but I think I will yield the remainder of my time.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you to both counsel for your presentation of arguments today. This case has been submitted, and we will issue our decision in the time prescribed by statute.